This hour is brought to you by Menards, everybody.
Save big money at Menards.
Woo! It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got 5 on it. Number 1.
Question number 1 on 5 on it with Rahimi and Harris. How much preseason football do you want Caleb Williams to ultimately play this preseason?
I think he should play in the next 2 games since we didn't see him in this one. Not 1, but 2. I know it's a quick turnaround and you have more joint practices and the Chiefs are on the way, as are the next opponent on Sunday. But I still think that if you're good enough to have 87 snaps before the game, then I think you're good to play in a series or 2 in each, right? At least. At least.
I would like to see Caleb Williams play a half. That's probably not going to happen, but that's what I would like to see.
I mean, it's what should happen.
Unless they go, let's say he starts a game and they have 2 touchdown drives. Okay, you can sit him then. But otherwise, I'd like to see Caleb Williams play a half of football. Make sure that offensive line has got it together. Is that too much to ask? To make sure the offensive line itself is the brand new group with a bunch of guys that have not played together before?
Well, and most importantly, I think it's not just the offensive line, it's you with the offensive line. If cadence is still this much of a focus and this much of a concern, then at some point you need to also see how it is against somebody who you're not going to face in the Bills, right? At least on Sunday. And then ultimately, perhaps there is no better place to practice it than a preseason game at Arrowhead.
I mean, that's a great point. I just would like to see extended Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, get together. Let me know that you guys can cook together. I don't want to get to game 1 of the regular season and see Ben look at Caleb and Caleb look at Ben and things aren't together the way they need to be when it's live bullets and when it's... Who's that guy that runs the defense in Minnesota? He's been known to take some things out and throw them at you.
Man, you know, a fan of his... And I don't even know if fan is the right word. A respecter of what he brings to the game is coming up at 1 o'clock in Carmen Vitale when she joins us.
Let's get her thoughts on it.
5 on it. Number 2.
Should there be OT in preseason?
I know. I'm the psycho that wants overtime in preseason. I didn't want to see the tie. But it's not necessarily for the reasons that you might think. It's not because I have some interest in who's going to win that game, and I don't necessarily think, oh, if Caleb Williams had played, would it have been a tie? I'm not thinking that into it. But when you consider that a Super Bowl was arguably lost based on overtime strategy, the most important of all of the games, and that it came down to a coaching decision out of Kyle Shanahan when he decided to take the ball first and the Chiefs benefited. Could we all use a few more reps?
No. No, because a few more reps will get people hurt. There's a reason they shortened overtime from 15 to 10 minutes. Because people were out here getting hurt.
You think if I asked 49ers fans if they think that they could have had another opportunity to try to practice that when it didn't count, that it would have helped?
You don't need to practice that in the preseason. You need to just know the rules at practice. That's something you just go over in practice.
Important game exposes that your rule preparation was not as good as it could have been.
I think the biggest thing you're leaving out here when you're saying yes is that the rules for postseason are different than the rules for the regular season and overtime. So
I'm
practicing
aware.
In this preseason wouldn't matter because you're playing by a different set of rules.
Also, well, the starters in the preseason aren't playing at the end of an OT game.
Exactly.
But there is no overtime.
And there shouldn't be.
So you could theoretically have it be based on postseason overtime to be able to help do this stuff. And I knew that. I told you in the pre-show meeting. I know that postseason overtime is different for regular season.
I know, but I just want to make sure everybody else out there knows as we tell you why. No, there should not be overtime in preseason. Get on the plane and go home.
I'm telling you right now, I take lessons from the warning signs that I get. And I'm not saying that I'm going to coach in a Super Bowl anytime soon. But I'm also, if I'm on an NFL staff, I'm trying to figure out a way to make sure that doesn't happen to us.
I just want to say this. The incident you're talking about with Kyle Shanahan was 2 years ago. The first thing every team did last preseason, last training camp, is make sure everybody understands. And then the first thing that all the playoff teams did last year is make sure all their teams understood the difference between postseason overtime and regular season overtime.
I mean, like, when it counts the most. I'm just thinking if there's some extra way to be able to prepare for that, that might be a good way.
I don't want to get anybody hurt.
Do you think coaches, if you gave all the head coaches truth serum, would they rather have preseason games or the joint practices? What would they rather have more of? I think they would rather do the joint practices than a preseason game.
I think they say that, but ultimately there's a reason those preseason games still exist. And I don't think it's just to sell tickets. Because Soldier Field wasn't a sellout yesterday. I don't think that's what that's about.
No, I think coaches would still say, no, we're going to keep our joint practices and still have our preseason game, because they learn more in the preseason games about those bottom of half of the roster players and whether or not they want to keep them. It's a better set of evaluation to have three different preseason games to evaluate everybody fighting for a spot on the back half of the roster.
Number three.
Third question on Five on It with Rahimi and Harris. We're shifting the baseball. Make your strongest case for how the Cubs will win the NL Central.
All right, I thought about this on my way here. Bud Selig comes back as temporary commissioner and switches the Brewers back to the American League.
That's actually not bad.
That's all I got.
That's actually not bad.
How fast can this happen? Can we get this done?
Wait,
with the quickness.
Robbie, did you know that the Brewers used to be in the American League?
I did.
Okay, good. Yeah,
I found that out last week.
Do you know about the M&B logo?
Oh, I did learn about that. Isn't it a glove? It's a glove.
Twitch mob, I don't need you guys killing my dream of Bud Selig being temporary commissioner to get the Brewers to go back to the AL. I don't need that kind of energy
in
my dream.
Is you'd have to deal with Bud Selig as commissioner, and I don't remember that as a fine time in growing the game of baseball.
Well, I think he thinks he was saving it, but
I don't think he was. I don't think he. I think they survived with him as commissioner. Look,
I think a lot of people have a bone to pick with him, and I think the Hall of Famers would like, or the ones who are being excluded would probably like to have a discussion as well.
I'll say this: here's how the Cubs come back. They get Kyle Tucker healthy. They get Miguel Amaya back.
MacGyver? I heard MacGyver. Well, I he would MacGyver. Also help the Cubs
yeah, he
in
would,
this situation.
You know, come up with a concoction, come up with a formula, come up with an invention that would help them win the NL Central. But I think
he would turn a paperclip into a torpedo bat. That's what MacGyver would do.
The Cubs aren't going to play 750 baseball the rest of the way, but they do need the Brewers to just come back to earth. The best way for the Cubs to win the Central is to sweep a five-game series next week. That's the best way, Layla.
Oh, my God.
Sweep a five-game series.
What is your confidence level? Last week we came up with the BBCI, the Ben Brown Confidence Index. What is your confidence index when it comes to the Cubs' likelihood of either A, winning the series against the Brewers next week?
Just winning.
Or B, sweeping.
So winning
the series?
I think
Bud Selig has to come back.
I put winning the series at 50-50. It's a home series. I think they could win it. I see sweeping the series. They got about a 7% chance of winning this or sweeping the series.
Also, as a bonus question, which fan base is in more of a tizzy right now? I'll give you three options.
Oh, can I guess the options?
It's Yankees, Mets, or Cubs.
Those were my three options.
Which fan base is in more of a tizzy?
I believe that the Mets are in the biggest tizzy. I think the Yankees are in the biggest tizzy.
It's the Mets. The Mets have lost so many straight games, and you just signed Juan Soto to this massive deal, and you suck. That sucks.
No, but Soto's been doing his job, though. I think it's the Yankees because Devin Williams. What?
It was raining from outside in on Saturday. American Family Field's roof did nothing to protect the Brewers fans from that deluge, however you want to say it, rainstorm, plague, biblical event, and yet they still even won that game 7-4. I think it's the Mets. You get swept like that, you spend $11 billion on everybody, you think you can do the right things. And confidently, David Stearns decided he wasn't going to go after extra additions to certain positions. No, I think it's still the Mets because of how much money they spent going in, knowing that, for example, they get swept by the Brewers. But join the club, guys. Join the club. Dodgers are with you.
Couple of good texts right here. 847, the Cubs will win the NL Central if 25 Brewers get PED suspensions. I imagine the 26th Brewer would probably be Andrew Vaughn in this scenario. He would not get the PED suspension. Also, 815 brings up a brilliant point. Wouldn't the Astros have to go back to the NL Central? So now you got to deal with the Astros to win the division.
Let's scratch the whole idea then. Oh, man. Oh.
In a very less Grobstein moment, I was there. I was at the last series for the Astros against the Cubs in the National League. And that was the first time that two 100-loss teams had met in a regular season in like 50 years or something. Luke and I were both there. Luke Stuckmeyer. And when he heard that stat, he goes, "And we're just the reporters to do it."
I was there.
Like, do you like losing? Then Luke and I are the reporters for you.
Also, 630 is claiming that yesterday's game was a sellout, the Bears. I didn't know that.
Well, I shouldn't. The capacity and the attendance was not...
people showing
it
up.
It was in the 40s.
Yeah, people actually showing up and dealing with the swamp that
it
was
is,
Soldier
it is
Field.
In my notes here.
Swampy Soldier Field.
Yeah, so there were, and also if you looked at the game, that was not a capacity crowd. Layla mentioned Soldier Field was not a sellout yesterday. Our texts get cut off. Okay.
Yeah. Brad Biggs tweeted yesterday that the attendance was 43,537.
Yeah,
that's
I knew the official number. The attendance was 43, so I knew it was lower than capacity. But for those who sat outside, I salute you.
Sweep a five-game series. That's all I'm saying.
Luke Kanellis had a suit on, and Ant Heron was in a vest and a long sleeve.
Oh, he had
shirt.
The jacket. He said, no, thank you.
Amazing.
Number four.
Finally, a real question we have coming up. The Bulls have reportedly offered Josh Giddey 4 years at $20 million a year. He reportedly wants $30 million a year. How realistic is it that he signs the $11.9 million qualifying offer?
Okay, why do I feel like nobody found this out this weekend? Like, how sneaky was that? That was Jake Fisher who reported it. Hat tip to my buddy Mike Williams, who I used to work with. He's the one who also saw this. And he does a great job, Bulls Confidential. But is that the most news dump of news dumps, if that's the case? Or did he just step into information? Newsweek has it aggregated. Fisher's work is behind a Substack. And it says, league sources say that the Bulls made an offer of $80 million over 4 years to restricted free agent Josh Giddey when the offseason commenced on June 30th. Giddey, of course, is seeking an annual salary in the $30 million range, as one does. Chicago has been anchored in the $20 million range in annual value ever since its original offer. And naturally, Jonathan Kuminga is mentioned in all of this.
Well, yeah, because how would you feel about a Kuminga for Giddey trade?
Well, Robbie would be distraught.
How does that help the Bulls, getting Jonathan Kuminga? What are the Bulls' needs right now?
Oh, the Bulls need a lot. They need a GM who's willing to make trades for
who is making plays on the Bulls. Picks.
I mean, moving Vooch is a big piece of this.
Yes.
Like who makes plays on the Bulls? It's Coby White and then who else? They need a playmaker. Josh Giddey is a playmaker.
Who'd you say Josh?
That's a Josh Mickey. I don't know why, how that came out of.
He's been Mickey Mouse.
We talk for a long time
every day. So here's the thing. I think with every passing day, it becomes more and more likely that Josh Giddey will sign an $11.9 million qualifying offer. Because Robbie makes a good point. Josh Giddey does make plays. So it's not like if he signs the qualifying offer, they're going to freeze out Josh Giddey.
A lot of plays.
So he'll have a whole year of a runway to figure it out and to show us that the back half of last season was what Josh Giddey actually is. And maybe even show some improvements on defense as well.
I will say that if this is the truth from Jake Fisher, that good on the Bulls for not doing the same thing that they did with Patrick Williams. When you know that there wasn't a market for somebody, or that you may have had a different understanding of the market, this was pretty straightforward. You don't have other teams that you go to. Like, there's not a lot of leverage here. I know Brooklyn's been bantered about, but until that happens, this is what you're working with.
Listen, they should have signed Patrick Williams to the qualifying offer, being specific about what should have happened. So now they have a chance to just let it play out. There's no reason for the Bulls to flinch on this. There's no leverage play here for Josh Giddey. He's either going to take your $20 million a year, or he's going to sign the QO.
Oh, I had a bonus question, okay. Five on it, relating to the Bears.
Five on it.
Since we have time. I wrote down in my notes, which was more exciting, a 24-24 preseason tie or that stupid Seattle game where they lost 6-3 last year that was a real game?
Wait, do we need to get through
the
question first?
I think it was this
game. No. I thought you were saying bonus, like the end of the five.
No, I'm
You're
throwing it in right now.
Okay. The 6-3 game was way worse than anything.
Wasn't this more exciting? Sunday
it
was
more exciting. Yeah. What do you mean?
We're going to deserve trophies.
I told you what my dad
be an
said
oral
watching that game.
Of the 6-3 game.
Oh, this is what Bears football looks like, huh?
The fact that Ian Happ was at that game, guys. Like, you never want to go to a football game again.
Ian Happ tried to play it up, too, like it was worth seeing.
I mean, he gets street cred, there's no doubt. But still.
Number five.
We continue on with Five on It on 670 The Score with Raheemy and Harris. Here's the question. Was there any doubt the White Sox would win on Ozzie Guillen bobblehead day?
Hell no! If George McCaskey can say hell on a broadcast, I can too. I loved seeing that. I mostly love seeing also just the moments that happened before the game with Ozzie and his family being out there and how he is still very much a part of this White Sox organization. Love watching him and Chuck on the pre- and post-game show. I, of course, loved working with Ozzie, and I think it was fantastic that they were able to win on Ozzie Guillen bobblehead day. And another example of how the White Sox are growing is that. Because would you have ever said on any bobblehead day last year that would have happened?
No, because Colson Montgomery wasn't in the lineup on any bobblehead day last year.
Ooh.
Did you see that man's home run? 452 feet onto the concourse, and it was just a bomb. It wasn't a bomb, because bombs go way up and then come down. This was a rocket. It went straight out.
Can I tell you the exit velo and distance?
Yes.
And the launch angle makes this even more wild, actually.
Go ahead.
The exit velo, you heard PCA on the broadcast last night on ESPN say 104 miles an hour off the bat is fast. PCA was respecting 104. This went 114.5 miles an hour.
That's
hard. Not even real.
That's the hardest ball he's hit on the south side.
To compare, Lenin Sosa's home run was 103.8 miles an hour. This was 114.
But neither of those were in the 70s is what you're saying.
The distance was 452 feet.
I saw where it landed. I knew what was good.
But the launch angle, typically you're going to have a launch angle in the 30s if that's the case. No, laser. This was 27-degree launch angle.
Yeah, that's an acute angle. Yeah,
that torpedo bat is working for him.
It is definitely working. Also, we got this text. Hot take coming from 815. Hot take. I am a Cubs fan, but my brother drugged me to the South Side for a game yesterday. Hot take. The Sox do it better as far as family atmosphere. Kids got to come in early and get autographs. It was crazy seeing Ozzie back on the mound with his grandchildren. I will proudly display my bobblehead in my Bears and Cubs man cave.
Aww.
Sox don't get enough credit for a great game day experience. They just need a better product on the field. Yesterday was great.
But that's the point. It was great. It was wonderful seeing everybody in the Guillen family there. I thought that was a lot of fun. And to know that the Sox win and back him up just makes you feel good. The warm fuzzies, if you will. I also want to tell people about this. This is pretty cool. If you don't know, now you know. Listen for your chance to win a pair of general admission tickets for Riot Fest to see Blink 182, Weird Al Yankovic, Alkaline Trio, Rilo Kiley, The Pogues, and more at Riot Fest on Friday, September 19th. Weird Al.
It'll be hoodie season, so.
I've seen Weird Al live three times. He's great.
You have?
As a kid. My family loves Weird Al.
That's
makes
awesome.
No sense.
I love that, though. He's fun.
What's your favorite Weird Al song? Do you have one?
Probably Fat. Because I'm fat.
Yeah.
That came out when I was a kid.
And the suit blew up.
The music
There's
video.
There's nothing like fart jokes and like at Weird Al songs and parodies coming out at a magical time.
His polka medleys, too, are great as well.
He's a good guy. Good guy to watch.
Idols is playing at Riot Fest on Sunday. I can't see them because Bears. Pretty sure it's at the same time as the Bears and Cowboys game, which I want the Bears to win, for the record. For the record. Nah, if they don't, that's going to be catastrophic.
The Matt Eberflus revenge game?
Especially if like they don't have Micah Parsons. No, I'm not going there.
They're
going
to have Micah Parsons. We know how this is going to end.
I don't necessarily know that he's going to be playing in that game. Let's talk more Bears. Dan Wiederer joins us next. Weezy talks football with you on Raheemy and Harris on the Score.
Dan Wiederer, Bears beat reporter and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
You're going to be relying on a lot of young players, guys that have to materialize into who they thought they were.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
We'll mention this mainly because Chicago Tribune writer Dan Wiederer said we would mention this nugget.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer.
Thanks, coach. We'll go first to Dan Wiederer.
On 670 The Score.
Let's do it. Let's go to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today, and that is where we find Dan Wiederer, Weezy. He of the Take the North podcast, the Bears beat reporter for the Tribune. He got to sit in the air conditioning yesterday at Soldier Field and watch preseason game number one. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys today?
We're good. Wondering if it's hot outside or not. We got to work really early, so we're not sure. But it's nice to have that first preseason game done, because that means we only got two to go before you have realer football, because the preseason games are real, because they do help determine who's on the roster, who's doing what. I understand all of that. What was your biggest takeaway from Sunday's experience at Soldier Field?
Well, to your first point, Marshall, we're getting really close to where the Bears really need to start understanding where they are on the runway to the regular season. 2 weeks from now, the preseason will be in the rearview mirror. They're going to be planning for a Monday night game against the Vikings and a really difficult defense to deal with. And so they have to understand the urgency of these next couple of weeks as they get themselves aligned. Yesterday, I thought it was a good day for a lot of different players out there. You know, Ben Johnson said, look, like this game doesn't count per se, but it definitely matters. And you saw that in spurts from certain guys. You know, like there were moments and players yesterday that I think flashed. And what you have to do is now build on the flashes to produce some consistency. I think Austin Booker would be probably at the top of the list of guys who showed out on Sunday afternoon. But Austin Booker had 2.5 sacks against the Bills in the preseason last year, and then it didn't materialize in the regular season as frequently as they wanted. So he just has to continue to kind of stack days together, stack performances together, and see where it goes. I'll also say that 57-yard kick in the first half is one that we should take note of here in Chicago, because for those worried about the leg strength of Cairo Santos, he just gave his new coaching staff a reason to trust him a little bit with not only the kick that he made, but the way he made the kick with so much distance left to spare.
Yeah, I think that was a big part of it, Dan, was the fact that it wasn't just a low-line drive as we saw last season. And the wind wasn't really a factor. I saw there was a slight breeze, slight, coming off of the ribbons off of the top of the goalpost, but I don't think it was anything that would have helped that much in that scenario.
Cairo is so cool to talk to because he's such a technician and he's willing to kind of share with you what goes on in the lab. And so he spent time this offseason working on distance. And that's not just adding leg strength. It's working on how you kick the football and what trajectory you want to launch it at and how you can kind of perfect that. He put a lot of work into that, knowing what happened last year with the kicks that got blocked. And so it was a good sign there. Also a good sign that the Bears got that ball back with 6 seconds to go, got a 13-yard gain, got out of bounds, got the clock stopped, and were able to kick that field goal. I thought it was funny after the game to hear Case Keenum talk about how the home stadium clock operator might want to be a little bit quicker with that finger, so they don't have to go to replay review to get that last second added back on the clock. But a good moment situationally, I think, for the Bears there, something that they can carry with them going forward.
So we were debating this, Dan. How much can you take away from what we saw yesterday offensively from Ben Johnson, is this is what he does, as opposed to this is a preseason game, and obviously there's a lot of tricks he's going to keep in his bag until the regular season?
Yeah, I don't look into yesterday's game very deeply at all in terms of learning about Ben and what his offense is going to look like and how he's going to run things. This is the preseason. It's very basic. You're trying to get certain things done, but you're not really showing a lot. Your first unit offense is not out there, with the exception of the two competitors for the left tackle job. I think Trapillo got about 36 snaps and Braxton about 24. And so there's a lot more to learn about this Bears offense that will come 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, 5 weeks from now, and beyond. And they've got to be very, very honest again about the urgency of getting themselves there, because now they're crossing that bridge from volume to we've got to refine this to what works for us when we go into the regular season. And I think that process has got to accelerate here in the coming days.
I also, Dan, think that part of our job as those who observe the Bears is, for example, when you bring up Austin Booker, I think it's hard for us sometimes to separate how somebody was used in that space or in that defensive scheme, for example, versus who they can be as a player. And that's a part of it too. Like Cole Kmet, I think, is a little more straightforward. I think that was easier for us to say last year is not indicative of what he can do for this Bears team. But there's a lot of players where I'm asking that question. Guys like Austin Booker. We saw a lot of Zach Pickens yesterday, for example, and trying to figure out if was it use or was there something else happening there? There's a lot of players that fit into that category.
Yeah, well, we won't know, right, until the regular season begins, kind of how some of these answers materialize for us. You know, like what I liked about Booker's three sacks yesterday is that they came in a variety of ways. You had the motor sack to start things, you know, okay, that's in there for him. Then you get a nice spin move. And then the last one, the strip sack, where he just absolutely wins right off the snap with explosion and getting that power going, and then taking advantage of a quarterback who didn't feel him coming and pounced and got the ball out and set the Bears up for a 3-yard touchdown drive. And so it came in a variety of ways, which is encouraging for the coaching staff to see. I do remind people that for much of camp here this month, he's been edge rusher number 5. You know, they've had obviously Sweat and Adangbo as their starters, and then behind them, Dom Robinson and Tano Passanio, we'll have to try that one again, have been more favored, right, in terms of getting the reps. And so they're going to have to just continue working through this in the what's left of camp. And again, a big week coming up here with another set of joint practices later in the week against the Bills, and then the preseason game on Sunday night to give them more reference points.
Can the quarterback be gotten to? That's one of the biggest questions I have every single year for the Bears. But another big question I have is who's going to be running the football and how much? And Kyle Manongai showed me a little something, Dan, in that, okay, I know he's a 7th-round guy, but it looks like he could contribute immediately.
His path to contributing would be to show that he can be very reliable on special teams, and then you find your way, you know, hopefully under the 53, and then hopefully into a jersey on game days. And so this coaching staff has loved what they've been able to pour into him and how he's responded to coaching and teaching and the volume he's been able to take on. You know, his scouting report coming out of Rutgers is he's going to do everything the right way, and he's going to play hard for you in every practice and every game. And that was evidenced a little bit on Sunday. And now you just got to find kind of what your backfield ideally looks like. Roschon Johnson out right now with a foot injury that came after the big physical violent practice of last Tuesday. And when windows of opportunity open, you know, it's up to you to figure out how you're going to use those. And Manongai has got a chance here to kind of show that he earns the trust of Ben Johnson and that offensive staff.
We may have not seen anything that resembles the first 15 plays against the Vikings, Dan, but I think we did get a good understanding of how people will be utilized. Like, for example, Manongai was out there and expected with some pretty big pass blocking assignments. You know, there were times where he was on the edge. There were times where matchups depended on him blocking. And that's when I said to myself, as much as I like him, you know, sometimes you really can look small on the field compared to who you're facing as a defender. And I know that is a big part of this offense.
That's a thing. And sometimes, like, you can be right in pass protection and the guys are just bigger, stronger, and faster than you. And it's like, okay, you were very assignment sound, but this is a freak show of a league with the men that are running around here trying to do harm to your quarterback. And so you've got to continually work on all of those things to make sure that you can handle that part of the job. For sure. This running game is something that Ben Johnson's going to lean into. You know, we know very much His commitment level to getting that ground game established and what he thinks that does to open up the passing game and the play action passing game. And so again, this is that period of the summer now where, you know, you feel like you got all the time in the world, and then that hourglass starts to sound louder right next to you, you know, and you've got to figure out how to figure out what your plans are, because September 8th is not as far off as it may seem. And the Bears got to be ready to go that night, because we know whatever happens that night, there's going to be a massive overreaction to it. And it's going to create conversation here that is going to set the tone for how they get out of the gates.
Dan Weeder, the Bears beat reporter for the Tribune, also co-host of the Take the North podcast, joining us here on Raheemy and Harrison. Yes, there will be lots of speculation, lots of talk. My thing that I'm trying to figure out right now is it realistic that I would like to see Caleb Williams play, I don't know, a half of preseason football before the regular season gets here? What do you think about how much he'll actually play and if he'll play in the preseason?
I need to see it myself. I need to see it at least once for one game. And you just, because look, like, guys, we've spent almost all of training camp talking about the Caleb Williams evaluation through what the coaching staff has told us we should be looking at, which is pre-snap operation, right? It's taking the play call, getting it, you know, called in the huddle in a way that's urgent and understandable and gets everybody lined up. And then you got to handle the motions and the shifts. And, you know, there's 35 things that you've got to check the boxes on before you even get the football in your hands. And so you can simulate that. You can do a lot of it in these joint practices. You can have your 87 play Sunday morning work through at Soldier Field, but it would be really nice to knock some rust off on a game stage with real live football being played. And I think Ben is leaning in that direction. We'll see kind of how this week unfolds and how their plans may or may not change. But I think Caleb and the entire first unit offense would benefit from that, just to, you know, it's not a make or break thing for the season, but it is helpful to just getting you off on the right foot when that regular season does arrive.
Well, what happens, Dan? Immediately, I think to Ryan Poles talking about how steps were skipped, and is one of them getting more game snaps, you know, in game reps. And I tend to think that probably would help get you back on track.
I think some of it with Caleb is just fully meeting the coaching staff at the demand level that they're at in terms of understanding the entirety of the playbook, understanding all the verbiage that you need to spit out to your teammates, understanding all of the motions and shifts, and not only what attaches to which play, but how they need to be timed up. And there's just a heavy volume here of operational stuff that he's being asked to take on. And Ben's been very forthright in saying, look, like, this offense is more complex than the one I installed in Detroit 3 years ago, but I can't turn around and go backwards because the league is constantly evolving. And in order to stay in front of these defensive coordinators who are constantly coming up with new twists and turns to make offenses uncomfortable, I need my quarterback to catch up. And so that's the process that Caleb's in here. It is part of the reason I think that they did that hour-long workout Sunday morning to get him a really high volume. Brad Biggs counted 87 plays that Caleb ran between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. yesterday. And that's important to get the quarterback used to all of those things that go into a play before a play has even started, you know? And so that's the process that they're in, and they're going to keep piling that on until they feel like the quarterback is acceptably comfortable going into a game that really matters.
One thing I'm going to have to get used to is saying Dan Weederer, co-host of the Take the North podcast, but not saying the part about Bears beat writer for the Tribune, because I understand you just announced with Mark Grody on the Take the North podcast that you're going to be leaving the Tribune. That's quite the run you had there.
It's a half announcement. We only gave half the announcement. We got to wait a little bit on the other half. But yeah, this is it. This is the last stretch here for me at the Tribune. It's hard to believe. It was a fun-filled, eventful 12 years, zero playoff victories, by the way. I think you established that over time. But I'm not going far. You don't have to worry about getting my Bears takes. They will be prevalent and continuing. But this is the end of the road. I think the Friday joint practice with the Bills will be the last thing I cover for the Tribune. And so my last game covered for the Tribune is a 24-24 preseason tie against the Miami Dolphins, exactly how I envisioned it when I walked through those doors in 2013.
That's how it be okay. Sometimes.
I asked this question earlier on 5 on It, our segment at noon, so I'll ask you. Was the preseason tie more exciting, even though it was a fake game, than the 6-3 loss to Seattle that was a real game?
There was so much chaos at the end of yesterday's game where it was like neither team really wanted to win it. Like, they both had opportunities in the final 2 minutes to just go ahead and make it a non-tie. and they both kept stepping on their own feet and falling over. And so it was like, oh yeah, this makes sense. Like, let's just end it as a tie. And then to hear, I think it was Scott Novak, the head official, just reminding everyone in the building, yep, no more overtime in preseason. You can go home now. And so I think everybody took great relief in that. You'd seen enough football for that to be an appropriate ending to that game. And I kind of have blocked out that 6-3 game in December last year from my from my consciousness. So I don't remember what my feelings were leaving the stadium that night, other than, God, when is the coaching search starting and ending?
That one was up there for me as far as just so bad it's good. That one was one of my favorites or least favorite.
I probably could get you a top 25 of so bad it was good losses over 12 years on the beat, but that'd take a little bit of research. But there's been plenty of it over the years.
Well, you know, I'm going to read it. So if that's the way you want to go out, I'm into it.
That'd be a great farewell.
You know, I did joke that there is, you know who's coming back to Halas Hall on Friday? Mitch Trubisky. So it might be a chance for me to go out reconnecting with Mitch and talking about his return to Halas Hall. And I'm sure there's going to be some emotions for him that day. And so his return to Halas Hall come on my last day, and we can reminisce and be nostalgic about all that stuff. And maybe that's my farewell.
I do think the best source is always a former employee. Dan Wiederer, congratulations. We are looking forward to what is next. And just, again, what a wonderful run you had informing us day after day on the Tribune beat.
Thanks, Dan.
And it's just on the Tribune beat. I'll be around. Thanks, guys. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Dan. That was Dan Wiederer with a bit of an announcement. You can still hear him, as we mentioned, on Take the North, and we're looking forward to seeing what is next. What is next for us is, I think, trying to determine what we saw in not only yesterday's pregame workout for Caleb Williams, but getting to understand a little bit more about what we saw in the game and how that might translate to when QB1 is playing in a game.
That is the hope.
Marshall is crossing fingers on both hands. So we will examine that. And I think go back to what Caleb Williams told the NFL Network about what we can expect out of the offense, because you started to see it yesterday. That's next on Raheemy and Harris on The Score.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Most of those starters got to go through that 70-play workout. Give me a sense of what you think Caleb is going to get out of these moments and what he's trying to get to with Ben Johnson.
Well, it's more reps. I talked to Ben Johnson for a period of time after the workout was completed. They're going to have him go through another 25 or so tomorrow, and it's literally taking him through the cadence. And there's a lot on his plate. I mean, it's the motions, it's the shifts. They're going to do a lot more of that offensively, Jim, this season.
That was Adam Amin and Stacey Dales. It was Adam and Stacey, just a different Adam and Stacey, alongside Jim Miller on the Fox 32 broadcast yesterday. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. And I think we're starting to see things come together in a way that is making us understand what the Ben Johnson offense could look like for the Bears.
Well, listen, I'm not trying to get nitpicky, because as Dan Wiederer just told us, he doesn't think this is exactly what it's going to look like, because I think they are keeping a lot of things and holding a lot of things in until the regular season starts. But as long as it gets first downs and moves down the field and gets touchdowns, I think that's all the Bears fans care about, because you've been subjected to what you've been subjected to for the last, you tell me how many years we need to go back when
I'm
I said
sorry,
that.
I'm sorry, did you just say as long as it moves down the field and gets first downs and touchdowns? You act like that's such a commonplace thought.
I know it's
you
not.
You might as
that's
well
why
have said they all sprouted what? Wings and like floated down the field and shot fire out of their noses. On unicorns.
Listen, the Bears offense has had issues. Caleb Williams, I'll give you two moments of current Bears right now and their thought process. First, you can go back to Roma Dunze when they asked him, was that Mullion Hall that asked him about becoming possibly the top receiver in Bears history in receiving yards?
That was Parkins and Spiegel.
That was
in
Parkins and Spiegel. Did you hear how high-pitched his voice was on that? Play that again, Robbie.
In a career?
Let me...
Like
the amount of yards that they racked up in college compared to the amount of actual Bears offensive yards that have happened.
So what I'm trying to tell you is, Roma Dunze really couldn't imagine how inept the Bears offense has been.
Don't forget that Case Keenum in college... 19,217 yards to go with 155 touchdowns. So I'm not surprised at all that Roma Dunze went in the career.
In the career?
So that,
poor Rome.
That's one thing, right? When you're talking about, you know, what we've seen from, you know, the Bears offense of late. And the players on the current roster don't even understand how inept the offense has been until they find out with questions like that. And don't forget, you know, Case Keenum in 2018 for Denver threw for 3,890 yards.
That would top any Bears quarterback.
That would top any Bears quarterback. And my other instance of that is Caleb Williams. That doesn't even deserve a slow clap. Caleb Williams is like, oh, I think I can become the first Bears quarterback to ever throw for 4,000 yards.
In a career?
No, a single season. But
and,
still.
I mean, he got 35-41 your rookie year is nothing to sneeze at. So I say all of that to say, getting touchdowns and driving down the field and getting first downs is not that common for the Bears. But I want to go back to what Caleb told Stacey Dales and Brian Baldinger on NFL Network last week, because he had mentioned just the order of operations when it came to the cadence. And we saw that, I think, really take shape, even in how we know the offensive procedure is going to look with this Bears team. I agree with Dan Weider. I don't think that we saw anywhere close to all the bells and whistles, you know, but when you're talking about base and some initial impressions, I feel like that is what we were able to see and look into. So Caleb Williams ends up with what we thought was 70. Turns out it was 87 reps before the game. Here's what he had to say about it in the pregame workout.
Or hope to not show that I'm...
Oh, I think we're having some audio issues when it comes to our board. So if that's the case, I know we're up against a break. I would like to mention this. So when Caleb Williams talked to Stacey Dales and Brian Baldinger, he talked about how there was going to be more shift than pre-snap motion. And I think that's what we saw yesterday. We saw a lot of pre-snap shift, but we didn't see a ton of motion up and down. There were occasionally calls where you saw that wasn't the initial design of the play, and then there were audibles that factored in. But I did see a lot of shift.
With the layered, all those different layers of things that Caleb Williams is responsible for, getting to the line of scrimmage, that's why I want to see him in preseason. Because I want to make sure he could do all that. I don't want week one against the Vikings defense to be the first time I'm seeing him try to do that against that defense in prime time. You know, let's not have that happen. That smells like disaster.
Oh, what can go wrong debuting somebody or something new against the Vikings for the first time? I flash back to December of last year.
That's why he better take the field against the Bills on Sunday night.
It doesn't have to be pretty. It is preseason. But as Ben Johnson said before the game, these games may not count, but they do matter.
I know we're talking football, but I do want to give something to the baseball fans. Is that okay? This Friday from 7 to 9, they can head to Coombs Corner in Lockport after the game. Meet Ron Coomer, which is a delight. Enjoy Yingling bucket specials and some Yingling swag. Don't miss the post-game party at Coombs Corner with Yingling. Did you know it's the oldest brewery in America?
That I did. You could also get some Yingling Flight if you want. Flight is your light beer option. It's always a good idea as well. I see her. She's here. We love to see Carmen Vitale always.
She's waving.
We love to talk football. Kind enough to join us in studio today. You know her as the NFC North reporter for Fox. She's covering the entire league. We will break it all down with her next on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score.